Yes, good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Your Honors, I am Ronald Darwin Ritchie, and counsel for the petitioner. Sorry, I take this off. Easier. I'm counsel for petitioner Maria Morales. Petitioners propose three particular social groups meet the particularity and social distinction requirements inter alia. Her three PSCs are one, family, two, El Salvadorian women who are in a domestic relationship, they are unable to leave, and three, El Salvadorian women who are witness to gang criminal activity and are targeted, because they filed a police report. One of the elements to qualify for asylum is that petitioner could establish that they qualify if they're a member of a particular social group. And we believe that
what makes them socially distinct to the Salvadorian public?
Socially distinct is, each one of these PSCs, of course, has to be analyzed, individually. This court has repeatedly held that the PSG of a family-based...
Where in the record will you find evidence to support that assertion that they are socially distinct to the Salvadorian public?
First with family, Your Honor, this court's recognized that it is cognizable that a family-based PSG is socially distinct, among other things.
I was speaking specifically to your assertion about the Salvadorian women who are witnesses to gang criminal activity and reported it to police.
Yes. This court in Crispin case held that family members of witnesses of criminal activity.
Maybe so, but to follow up on my colleague's questions, socially distinct and social distinction, it's not enough that the group itself thinks of itself as socially distinct. It has to be regarded as socially distinct by the society at large, not just by the group's membership. And that's where the evidence is simply lacking. And the reason you run into a problem with social distinction is that people are targeted, not just the group that you pose, but people are targeted regardless. They're just targeted by gangs for many, many different reasons. And so your proposed group sort of bleeds into the society at large, that the society at large wouldn't recognize this as socially distinct. They would think of the society at large, would think of the situation of we have a terrible problem with gangs and with violent, brutal behavior for many, many reasons, not just the reason that you posit. So it just, this is all very loose.
In that regards, since the home society in El Salvador does recognize these different particular social groups that we propose as being distinct and are identifiable, there are limiting language in these proposed PSCs and regarding the gang criminal activity in this case, it's this case is distinguishable by cases that, that, for example, the respondent has mentioned, in that you have women, which is one limitation. They witnessed the activity, but they also filed a police report. And in this case, factually, the petitioner filed a police report twice. And plus, she was there when the gang came in and they threatened to kill her. The State Department report does mention that, does discuss about witnesses and how witnesses of gang activity, criminal activity, that the government does try to protect them, try to help them, but they're not very successful in El Salvador at that. So that is evidence factually to demonstrate that, that these PSCs are socially distinct.
I just didn't see the evidence in the record that the society at large regarded this as a socially distinct group. It seemed to me that the proposed group is just one manifestation of a larger societal problem, not a socially distinct group, but simply part of a large, a very large landscape of highly regrettable gang activity and retaliatory conduct for every reason under the sun. And it don't just retaliate for failure to file a report, retaliate for failures to pay money, for intruding on their territory, or disrespecting them in the way that they are looked at, or what have you. But retaliation is a general means of conduct for these gangs. And that's the phenomenon. And to sort of pick out this subgroup and that subgroup and say they're socially distinct, I don't see the evidence for it. And I think it goes against their precedent explicitly that there has to be evidence of social distinction.
Well, yeah, we agree that definitely social distinction is one of the requirements. But we believe that the facts do demonstrate that the witnesses filed a police report, that they are considered by society in El Salvador as socially distinct group. They're different than individuals who have just witnessed gang activity or been victims of it. You have in this particular language or limiting language in the PSC that they filed a police report. And we concede that this PSC is the more challenging of the other two, but the petitioner doesn't have to show that she meets or falls within all three of the PSCs that she's proposed. Be granted asylum.
No, normally when these cases come up to us, the stronger ones at least present evidence that the IJ or the finder of fact regarded the asylum applicant as a credible witness here. But here the IJ is noting all kinds of inconsistencies in testimony, and there's no finding that the testimony is credible. And then when you get to these allegations, you find yourself wondering, did any of this stuff there's no credibility finding that would aid your client, I don't believe.
Well, You know, the precedent decisions are that if you that if a judge doesn't make a specific credibility finding, then the petitioner is deemed to be credible, and the board in this decision didn't question whether the petitioner was credible or not, and therefore we have to presume and assume that the petitioner was credible in general, and the board doesn't question that in its decision.
Don't have to presume that in view of inconsistencies in the testimony.
The IJ, the immigration judge, did mention that there were some inconsistencies, but he never made a determination that she was not, or he did not make an adverse credibility finding. Therefore, she is presumed to be credible without a specific adverse credibility finding having taken place.
Richie, can I ask you about the other two PSGs? Because I think you said that you thought those were stronger. So let me start with the proposed group of Salvadoran women in a domestic relationship they can't leave. Why do you think that's a stronger PSG than the first one you talked about, given the fact that one of the folks that was abusing her died, and the other one apparently left her home about 40 years before? So doesn't the record evidence suggest that she is not, if she may have been in a relationship that she couldn't leave, but she's not any longer?
Well, we believe that the focus of the law is why was the individual targeted? You know, how did they suffer persecution? Not something after. Arguably, everyone leaves a relationship at some point, whether it's by death or some other means. Most of these individuals, asylum applicants, come to the United States. Most of them do not come with their abusive partner or abusive family member. So all of them, if you will, leave the relationship at some point. We believe the focus should be on the harm suffered and why.
Isn't there no point of granting asylum or other protection to ensure that the SLE, the petitioner in this case, is in fact protected from harm? And if, as a factual matter, that's no longer the case in her home country, why would the United States grant asylum on those facts?
Well, a couple of reasons. If for no other reason, one is humanitarian asylum. All that she has suffered in her country. But I want to go back to your previous question. In the administrative record, it does state that her cousin, who had raped her previously, he approached her just right before she entered the country. And that's it on the administrative record, 87. So it was, her cousin on the still there. In terms, she is likely, again, assaulted, raped by her cousin. And we rely for this PSG on the board's decision in matter of ARCG, where they found that the domestic violence women victims that they can qualify that is a cognizable PSG, and in that case that woman had left the relationship, had come to the United States, and the board found that was still qualified in that language to leave the relationship. And In this case, you also have, I mean, that the part of the petitioner's partner, he's a longtime partner, and they have a child together. Yes, he's deceased, but she has, you know, she has suffered harm based on her in that particular social group of family.
Counselor, you have some time for rebuttal, and if my colleagues have questions, that'll be one thing. Otherwise, we'll look forward to hearing from you in rebuttal.
Thank you.
Ms. Singer, we'd be happy to hear from you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jennifer Singer, and I represent the United States Attorney General, the respondent in this matter. I think the primary question before this court is whether a petitioner's social group, specifically Salvadoran women who are witnesses to gang criminal activity and who have reported to police and are targeted because of that, meets the requirements for particularity and social distinction. And I think the answer to that question is no, it does not. As to particularity, at its core, particularity requires that a group be defined with clear boundaries. And it needs to be clear who is in that group and who is not in the group. And the particular social group here, again, Salvadoran women who are witnesses to gang criminal activity and who have reported to police and are targeted because of that, it does not consist of definable boundaries, and it's unclear who is within that group and who is not in that group. And we know this just by looking at the words of the proposed group. Witnesses, we know from Pereira-Martinez that it has two different meanings. It could mean someone who has knowledge of something or someone who has to testify under oath. So we know that term is ambiguous. You add the phrase gang criminal activity to that term witness to modify. I don't think it does much to clarify the group. It could mean someone with knowledge of gang activity or someone who testifies about gang activity. And criminal activity is also overbroad. Does it mean someone reports or is a witness to a gang member who jaywalks or who speeds or who litters, or does it mean something a lot more severe?
The whole difficulty with this case, and it sort of runs through all the different alternatives of PSGs, is it's all just very vague and loose. There's not sufficient evidence in the record supporting some claims. There are inconsistencies in testimony. There are questions about what the boundaries of the group are or whether petitioner even fits within them. It's just it looked at in its totality, it's just a very vague and loose case, and the statute requires some degree of precision.
I agree. I mean, in terms of the social group of Salvadoran women who are witnesses to gang activity, yes, I think that's very vague. As to the other social groups, I don't think there's any vagueness at all. With regard to the family, that was disposed of on nexus grounds. And with regard to people in a domestic relationship that you are not able to leave, I think it's clear that petitioner is not a member of that particular social group. So I think those are pretty clear. But in terms of vagueness, yes, this group of witnesses to gang criminal activity is very vague, and particular social group requires particularity. And by definition, this group is vague. It doesn't have that particularity that is required. Even the word gang is ambiguous. In Amaya, the court made it clear that because MS-13 was used to describe the group, it was clear and unequivocal what the group, who that group was. Here, gang is somewhat ambiguous. And then the phrase, who have reported to police, it's unclear what that means. I looked up our reporting on the web. Internet on the Merriam-Webster dictionary says to report means to give an account of, i.e. to tell, to be present, to present oneself, or to make, issue, or submit a report. So under those definitions, the social group could include someone who just tells the police something, or presents herself at the police precinct and discloses something, or actually writes a formal written report and then presents it to the police. And then even within those separate definitions are even more questions. Does that include someone who called 911? Does that include an anonymous tipster? Does that include someone who just told police something at a crime scene? Does that have to include someone who actually goes to the police station and makes a statement? You have to file an actual report. You file a complaint. It just is really unclear who falls within this group and who doesn't fall within the group.
You know, Counsel, I think you've made these points very ably in your brief, and we appreciate that. And maybe at this point, the best thing to do is to ask the panel if they have any questions of you. Judge Wynn, do you have any questions?
No, I'm satisfied with resting on the briefs.
Judge Diaz? The panel has no questions. We appreciated the quality of your briefing and your argument. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor, and I'll just rest on the briefs. Thank you.
Just a couple of points here. Respondent focuses primarily on one particular social group. As I noted earlier, the petitioner only can be successful if she can establish that she is a member of one particular social group. It doesn't have to be all three. And so we believe that she does, and I think the respondent concedes that that her family based PSG is cognizable, socially distinct and particular and immutable, and that her domestic violence, or being a victim of domestic violence, and is cognizable. And they mention about nexus. Well, and they argue in their brief that the partner raped and beat his partner continuously over at least a 10-year period, not on account of her gender, on account of her being his domestic partner. I believe that's incredulous to make that argument, because there is no evidence in the record to show that her partner went out and did this to other women in El Salvador, in the society. The only evidence is that he did this to this woman because she was his. She was his property, and he felt and believed that he could do whatever to her, and it didn't matter because she was his property. So we believe that the government is misplaced in its argument that there is no nexus.
Mr. Ritchie, what's the evidence of that? I mean, that's a compelling argument, but what's the record evidence that that was the motivation?
Well, one thing, if you look, actually, there was a pattern. He was doing this on and on. Her partner was abusing her, was raping her. Even when she tried to leave, he went out and brought her back.
I think the question my colleague goes, we don't know if these accusations or allegations are even true, and I'm not sure whether they are or whether they aren't, because what reason is there to believe that she was treated this way because of family? The government suggests that jealousy or possessiveness or sexual desire, or there may be a lot of reasons that this happens, and we have to take into account the on account of and because of language in the statute. And if this, I don't know what happened or what didn't happen, but there was in no evidence that it happened because of family membership.
Well, they had a child together. Okay, they lived together for at least 10 years. I think that establishes that there was a domestic relationship.
Well, I mean, but there are a lot of men and women that live together for long periods of time, and during that period of time, they engage in sexual relations. But that doesn't that the reason or motive for those relations derive from the alleged victim's membership in a particular social group.
Well, yes, we can't see into the perpetrator's mind. We can only, you know, assess based on what happened.
It's your burden. It's your burden.
Sorry?
It is your burden to establish nexus.
Correct.
At any rate, counsel, I think we do understand your position, and we appreciate it. Thank you for your argument, and I want to thank Ms. Singer for her argument as well. We are very grateful to you both.
Thank you very much.
All right, I will ask our courtroom deputy, please, to adjourn court, and we will take a 5-minute break and give the courtroom the clear, after which we will conference.
This honorable court stands adjourned. Sine die. God save the United States and this honorable court.